Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hey, and welcome to another episode. I'm Joe Saul-Sehy, and we'll get Doug Goldstein, who's driving this particular show today, here in just a second. But first, if you've ever wondered if there were a way for you to make some money on all that online chatter you see with millions of investors on social media, your wait's over, because the Buzz Index uses the same artificial intelligence techniques used by some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, and you can make their edge your edge. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ.
I'm really excited to be talking to Julia Carlson today. She's the founder of Financial Freedom Wealth Management Group. Actually, it turns out that Julia and I are very similar. We've both been in the financial planning world for a little over two decades, and we both work with people who are either retired or pretty close to retired. And Julia, what I thought we could touch on today is one of the things that a lot of people ask me. They say, Doug, you work with a lot of wealthy clients. What's the secret to success? So let's just start right there. I understand you also work with a lot of high net worth clients. What do you find is their secret to success?
I do. Thank you, Doug. Yes. You know, the first thing is there is no magic pill or no magic secret. Just like there's no magic pill for losing weight. The same thing for, you know, building a really strong financial foundation. And what I have found to be very consistent across my retirees, a lot of pre-retirees getting ready for retirement, is number one, they do most of their money together. What I'm finding in the younger generation clients is there's a separation between couples and partners where they do things separately, where in my older clients or retirees, the common denominator is that they have always done their finances together. And so that's, it's interesting.
When you say they do their finances together, what do you mean by that? Because my experience often has been, and you know, even in the modern age, I find that with older clients, it's frequently the man who's taking care of all the investments, and the wife is just kind of nodding until the husband dies statistically first. And then she's like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what to do. So I'm interested that you're saying that you're finding a difference than from what I'm finding.
Yeah. So what I see is, when I say together, what I mean is like one checking account, and they're talking about their retirement accounts together if they both have them. Yes, traditionally, I would say the male does have more of a influence and say, mostly because still in those generations, oftentimes the women did stay at home and do more caregiving and raising the children. And what I find also true is women want to continue to work. Maybe they found their career later in life. The husband's ready to retire, and the wife would like to still work, you know, beyond his retirement.
So we're saying that there's no magic pill, except you're pointing out that working together as a couple is a good idea. You know, one of the things that a lot of people do talk about in terms of success and financial success, and again, I'm just going to bring to bear things that I've seen in talking with very successful clients, is that they invested for growth for the long term, and they kept saving. They were meticulous about always spending less than they earned and putting aside money. It sounded almost to me like a magic pill. Of course, maybe it's not. Is that your take also?
Yes, I would agree. I think that what I have found is they had really good principles of saving money, but they may not be the best investors. They knew that they should be saving money, and it was almost like they put it into their retirement plans at work, or just kind of defaulted it into, but really did not have a lot of knowledge around investments.
Mm-hmm. Actually, in certain cases, that could be a benefit, because sometimes a little knowledge goes a long way to the path of destruction, which is that people will just I read this in Barron's today. It must be a great idea. And then they, you know, honey, I'm going to invest our money in that. And it's just like the worst decisions ever.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And back to the beginning, what I mean by doing it together is meaning they are doing their finances to where they have one pot of money, as opposed to two separate pots of money, not aligned with the goal of getting to retirement. That's what I see in the lower age.
So you're saying that not only do they look at it together, but they've got a specific goal, which is retirement, and which may be just another way of saying their goal is to accumulate a huge amount of wealth so that they can be financially secure when they get older.
Correct. Yes.
And this is, we're talking about millionaires here, because I really want to dive a little more deeply into that. What are other things that millionaires or people do who are on the path to becoming millionaires?
I think the habits that they have are good. A lot of my millionaire clients, they're not wanting a lot of money for extravagance, right? They're not going and buying a new car every year. I do see a trend that they want to spend money on experiences, and they want to spend money on traveling and maybe taking their children or grandchildren. And we call that memory investing.
Right. You're paying not to buy stuff, but to buy memories that not only you will have, but your children and grandchildren will have about you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I noticed looking around at your website a little bit that you also are very involved in the world of Dave Ramsey.
Yes.
And one of the things that I know that is kind of the religion of Dave is that people shouldn't have debt and they should get out of debt as soon as possible. Are you of that philosophy also?
Well, I would say consumer debt, absolutely. But when it comes to your mortgage, I always want to make sure that my clients are on track for retirement before they focus on paying off their mortgage.
That's interesting that you say that, because Joe Saul Sehi often talks about this, and he says that people are so focused on getting out of debt that they should just instead take some of that money, put it into a long-term investment portfolio, and statistically, they will do better rather than just paying down the mortgage, and then they'll probably end up spending extra money. They just have a side account that they can use in order to build their net worth. And ultimately, they'll pay off the mortgage because they're making monthly payments. Does that make sense to you?
That totally makes sense to me. Yeah, I'm not a big proponent of getting that mortgage paid off. I would rather have someone build financial security and build wealth and be able to get a, you know, tax deductions for being able to max out their retirement plans at work, or if they're a small business, you know, some self-employed type retirement plans. Absolutely.
Okay. So there is, you're describing that there is some good debt and some bad debt, and you're specifically saying that that mortgage might be okay. Although I think we have to be aware that not all mortgages are good mortgages, and you really have to look at the terms about what you have. Is there a good way for people to improve their mortgages, or is that something that you see your smart investing clients always focusing on?
Yeah, I would say in my experience, most of my clients either have 15-year or 30-year fixed rate mortgages. You know, we're in a pretty rural area that is not to move in and shake it, I would say, in a sense of like if you're in LA or a big city, there's probably more movement and more creative financing maybe that's going around. But I would say kind of the millionaire next door in our area is they don't move around a lot. So they typically have paid off the mortgage just because they've been there for 15, 20 years consistently.
Are you across the board against variable rate mortgages, or do you think there's a place for that also?
Well, I would say that there's probably a place for that if someone is going to be in the home for a short amount of time. That's pretty predictable, right? You don't want to be in a variable mortgage in an interest rate environment that we're in, that's for sure, if you don't have a set fixed period of time.
Got it. All right, let's just review a few of the things you said, and then we'll wrap it up. You started by pointing out one thing which I think is really critical is that couples should be dealing with their money together. And I really think it's on everything. A lot of times I'll tell a couple that if you want to work with me, you've got to come and deal with this together, because I can't just have one person telling me about what their goals are and then he goes home and tells his wife what their goals are. So I thought that was a great point. We also spoke a little bit about focusing on developing good financial habits so that you can save, and that part of that doesn't necessarily mean completely abandoning your mortgage, because that's actually a habit, something you pay for on a regular basis. And Julie, as we're wrapping up, is there one final idea you want to leave our listeners with if they want to really get on the path to becoming millionaires in retirement?
Yeah, I would say set yourself up for success. And what that means is doing as many things that you can in an automatic way. So making sure that you're consistently saving and investing for the future. You want to make sure that you have a built emergency fund. So many times I see clients having all of their assets in their retirement plan at work, where you really need to build some assets outside of that to give you diversification of the way that your money is going to be taxed in retirement. The ways that you can set things up in an automatic way, you know, whether you call them buckets or however, you know, the time period that you look at, if you do that and kind of set it on autopilot, that is the best success that I've seen in reaching that goal of retirement.
All right. Julie, listen, this was great. You gave a lot of good tips. So in the last few seconds, just tell me, how can people follow you and follow your work?
Yeah, so people can find me on Facebook. That is actually my favorite platform. I go live there and give great tips and advice around not only retirement planning, but all things personal finance. That is either Julia Carlson Fit Money, which is the name of my book, or Financial Freedom Wealth Management Group. Either of those would, if you just Google either of those, you'll find me.
Fantastic. Julia, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doug. Hey, before we get to the second half of the show, if you've ever thought to yourself, I wish I could make money from all of those people chatting about investments on social media, your wait's over because the Buzz Index uses the same artificial intelligence techniques used by some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, and you can make their edge your edge. The Buzz Index is licensed to an exchange-traded fund. You'll find it under ticker symbol BUZ, and it gives investors like you and I a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. There's no surveys, no guessing. Here's how it works. First, Buzz targets the most mentioned large company U.S. stocks across the social media landscape, and the more active the conversation, the greater the reliability is of that buzz. Each of the most mentioned stocks is given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics about whether it's positive or negative. And the 75 stocks with the most bullish positive scores, those get included in the index. Each month, it's tracked to capture the latest big data-driven insights with, again, every month, 75 different companies then with the most bullish scores selected month after month. So invest in the wisdom of the crowd. If you want to know more about it, head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for the Buzz newsletter, and more about the exchange-traded fund. I use the Buzz Index. Doesn't make it right for you, but I wanted to at least have that disclosure. And another disclosure, you're about to hear again from Doug Goldstein. How about that I disclose that, Doug?
That is a great disclosure. I think that people get disclosures when there's something really dangerous happening. So thanks for making me sound so dangerous. Dangerous Doug.
You're the dangerous man.
Dangerous Doug Goldstein. Yeah. Yeah, that's what... no one calls me that. Hey, how y'all doing? We've got the whole team here back today. We've got Linda, Miranda, and Joe. Linda, what's going on with you?
Hey, great to be here with you, Doug.
Nice. And Miranda, is it great to be here also with the rest of us?
Sure it is. It's great. I always love being here with you all, and I'm cautiously optimistic that Joe is back.
What does that mean?
Yeah, good to have you there, buddy.
I'm sitting right here, Miranda.
You should have heard what I said when you weren't.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. All right. So, Joe, since we've sort of missed some of your wisdom recently, let's start with you. You know, Julia was talking about success, and she was talking about how people who she works with who are really, in fact, financially successful, and I'm not going to say altogether successful because there are a lot of rich people who are miserable and unhappy, but let's assume they're generally happy. And, you know, she spoke about the secret of success and this concept of a magic pill. If you had to give people like a magic pill or a secret to success financially, what would you say?
I think it's this whole idea of deciding what you want. And it's funny because people often go, well, that's my big problem is that I'm not really sure what I want. And I think we're afraid to close doors. I think that the average unsuccessful person is so afraid that if they choose door number one, then door number two, door number three, door number five are close to them without really realizing that door number one, if you just have the guts to go through it, opens up a whole nother string of doors and new opportunities that you only get if you've got the willingness to go forward and really pursue one thing that you really, really want. So deciding what you want doesn't mean that you can't retrace your steps and do something else. But when you start with the end in mind, your investments line up, your life lines up, I think your happiness quotient goes up. So I think I totally agree with her there.
I think that you're actually describing something which in, you know, the finance world, we talk about opportunity costs. Linda, when you think about investing in one thing, it means that you're not going to invest in something else. How do you get over that that feeling of missing out when there really, in fact, it's true, there's an opportunity cost?
Well, opportunity cost is a huge part of the financial world. You're right. And it's one of my favorite things to talk about, actually, because I think wealth is really a choice. And so you're making certain choices when you do things with your money. If you're choosing to buy a new car instead of buying a car maybe a few years old that's already depreciated, you've probably made a decision right there that's going to lose you $10,000 to $15,000 in value over a few years. So wealth is really a choice. It's about decisions, and opportunity cost is all about choosing the right thing that's going to build wealth for you instead of making a decision that's going to make you less wealthy in the future.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the issues with that, and a lot of people, you know, really struggle with, and maybe Miranda, you can talk to this, is when people are often listening, for example, to a show like ours, and we talk about long-term investing and building wealth and becoming a millionaire, and then someone says, yeah, but I want the car today, or I want to take a vacation. How can people balance reasonably between spending money today and spending money tomorrow, when we all know every, you know, dollar that you spend today, when you compound interest over decades, is worth a gazillion dollars in the future? So you really do feel foolish spending any money today.
Yeah, and that's kind of the hard thing. I think what's really important is taking a step back and looking at your values and saying, okay, what matters in my life today and what will matter down the road? And so many times we act like what happens today isn't going to affect what happens tomorrow. And so that can provide this disconnect where we're like, well, I want the car today. And that's what you're thinking about is today, but you're not looking at your life holistically or your finances holistically. And if you take a step back and say, well, let's start with what I value and what matters most in my life. And, you know, for me, it's, you know, being able to have freedom and flexibility. It's being able to spend time with my family, being able to spend time with my son, making sure my son has a good solid financial foundation. And it's also making sure that I have freedom and flexibility, not only today, but down the road. And so I take a step back and say, all right, so maybe I drive my car for 5 more years, but what do I have today that I like? And what am I doing to make sure that I still have what I like today 5 years down the road? So being able to go do some of the things that I do today is more important than having a car. And so,
with the car,
right? You know, and I love the car that I have. It's great, and I'll want a new one at some point. But the reality is you got to take a step back and say, okay, what are my values, and what kind of lifestyle in general am I creating? And, you know, like you said, sometimes it's going to take a little bit longer to get there. But if you can take a step back and say, does this mesh with what's important to me? And am I getting what's important to me? And will I be able to live the life I want down the road with what I'm doing today, and kind of look at it all together? You have a greater chance of eventually creating the life you want.
Mm-hmm. This idea of one aspect of your life affecting another is so much more wide-ranging than I used to think it was, Miranda, to your point. Like when it comes to making money in school, I was never a fan of science classes. And I thought, well, hell, I'm not going to become a doctor or a scientist, so I can largely skip out on science stuff. And now as an investor, when I'm digging into companies or digging into trends, science is what I end up reading about almost more than anything. And so it's funny how these things that I thought were inconsequential in my life really can have big consequences when it comes to making money. And that's just one example of an area that I never thought would be really that important, you know?
Yeah, and I think, Doug, you brought up spending versus investing. You know, in the financial community, that's where I think people can get really hung up on the spending, and they're focusing all on the spending versus the investing. And of the two, I believe that in the investing component is the much more important component, because ultimately wealth is about compounding. And if you're not getting money in the market to compound for you, then you're probably not going to achieve your goals. And so I think you know, is spending wisely important? Sure it is, but it's also probably more important to get money invested, because you can be a saver and never save your way to wealth, but you can be an investor and easily invest your way to wealth.
I hear what you're saying, but actually I would argue that without the saving, obviously you don't have anything to invest. It seems to me,
you need the capital.
Once people get into the system, as long as you save, you know, put aside your $100 or your $1,000, your $10,000 per month or per year, whatever your level is, if you just do that, if you focus on savings, to me, that seems like that's the magic pill. Set up some portfolio once, you know, sit down with your financial planner and figure it out, and then just plug money in all the time. And to me, that sounds like the way to go. That would be my magic pill in investing.
Yeah, but you have to invest. And so here's my example. So let's say somebody's making $40,000 a year. They're focused on saving. Well, the average savings rate in the US, first of all, is only 2.8%. So people aren't nearly saving anywhere near 10%, which would be a minimum, or 20%, which would be a good savings rate, I think. But if you're making $40,000 and you're saving 2.8%, you're going to have $1,120 a year. And over 30 years, you're going to have saved about $33,000 versus the same person making $40,000 who invests $5,500 a year, say in an IRA, and averages 10% in the market, is going to have over $1 million in 30 years. So a huge difference between saving only versus investing. That's my point.
I hear. No, you definitely have to get it to work. Unfortunately, I don't exactly know what the percentage saving really refers to, because when you look at the studies, it seems like the vast majority of Americans have something like less than $1,000 in savings. It's shocking how little money people have.
It's horrible.
Let's move on to something else that Julia was bringing up about paying off a mortgage. And I know we touch on this from time to time. And Joe, I actually really tried to point out to her that she seemed to be suggesting what you often suggest is, don't pay off your mortgage. Instead, put aside a little money into some sort of fund, the money that you would otherwise use to pay off some mortgage, and let that money grow over time. Do you still hold by that?
I absolutely do. Well, there's caveats for everything. And the caveat is that you have to have the fortitude to leave that alone. But if you're at the point where you're putting extra money toward your mortgage, and you know that you're not going to touch that money, and that's what it's for, take the money and put it in a spot that's going to grow much quicker, that S&P 500 fund or total stock market index fund instead. And over a 20 to 30 year timeframe, we've seen nearly every single scenario work out in your favor. Not every scenario, but nearly every scenario. And when you look at the tax break that many of us have gotten, now those tax breaks for a lot of people are going to stop next year with the new tax law changes if you're in the United States. But the tax break you've gotten, that also worked in your favor. So I like that a ton for the reason that you can pay off your mortgage quicker. I like it for another reason as well, which is this. If you get disabled and you only have one payment left on your house and you can't afford to make that payment, and you took every dollar you have and you put it into the house, how much of your house do they take away from you even though you only have one payment left? They take the whole thing. And people don't realize the magic of liquidity. So I like having the flexibility to pay it off whenever I want and more quickly if I want, and also leaving that money in a spot where if something bad happens, I can get at it.
Well, Doug, it goes back to what you were saying about opportunity cost. When you look at investing in a house, you're talking about opportunity cost again, because if you're paying off your mortgage is going to be large depending on where you live, and larger in certain states, certainly than others, or countries than others. And so that goes back to your opportunity cost, where you don't have that ability to invest that money then. So if you have $300,000 in cash or $500,000 in cash tied up in a house, you don't have that money to invest maybe at a higher rate that you could compound it at. So when you look at where can you actually grow wealth and where is the best place for money, you want to look at where is it going to compound the best. And that usually isn't in your house. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't pay down your mortgage faster. We've talked about different strategies to do that. But I think focusing on paying off your house as if it is an important wealth building strategy, I don't agree with that. I think that the important thing is to compound at the highest rate that you can. That's going to grow your wealth the fastest. And so that is the opportunity cost, ultimately, that people have to look at.
All right. All right, let's wrap up with just one of the things that Julia said was the importance of finding a shortcut or an autopilot trick that you don't have to think a lot about, and it just gets you on the path to wealth. So maybe we could just all go around and take a minute just to say, what's your favorite autopilot trick? Or what do you think is just the number one easy thing that people can do now to really get on the path to success? Miranda, let's have you kick this one off.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the one thing. Whatever you can make automatic, that's the key right there. Is like you said, it's automatic. So like a lot of the things I've done is moved a lot of stuff to be taken automatically out of my paycheck. You know, you have your retirement account money that's being automatically taken from your paycheck. You have my son's 529 contributions. I've switched to being taken out of a regular paycheck. And before I had this regular paycheck, I actually, and I was a freelancer, I had an automatic transfer from my checking account to my son's 529 every month. So it's just these automatic systems where you're automatically saying, okay, these are the things that matter the most to me. Retirement, even my charity, my charitable contributions are automatically taken care of each month. So take a look at what's important to you. Make sure the most important things to you and the things that are going to be helpful to you in the future, you know, my travel fund, everything, I could just, you know, it's automatically put where I want it to be to work for me. And so identifying those things and then creating an automatic system to get it from point A to point B to where it's working for you, that's really the key in the end.
All right. And Joe, do you have a special key you want to share with us?
I just love, kind of to echo, I love this idea of setting up and toggling automatic investments. I think that whenever you promise yourself you're going to save money in the future, you don't do it. So just this magic of set it up and never worry about it again is the way to go. At the very least, you'll cover the minimum base. And then just raising that whenever you get the opportunity is so much better than thinking you're going to send in a check whenever you get an opportunity.
Okay. And Linda, how about you? What's your takeaway?
Well, I agree with Joe. It's important to get the automated investing aspect. And if you can do that in a tax preferred way, that's awesome. If you have access to a 401k account at work, especially if they match and give you free money, that's got to be place number one to do your automatic investing. If you don't have access to that, then an IRA would be the next logical choice. But you definitely want to get that automated feature where it's just coming out of your checking account and getting invested for you every month. And that can definitely build wealth for you.
Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna give my tip, which I get to say last because we're closing up, and then Linda doesn't get to argue with me because I know you don't fully agree. but I think one of the tricks that people need to do is just to keep an eye on their spending. And I don't mean to tighten the belt and be neurotic about it. I just mean you have to know where your money is going, because all too often when people don't realize it, they spend way too much money on all sorts of crap that they don't want. And you know that the average discretionary purchase that a person makes after a year, 80% of those purchases, the person doesn't want anymore. So if you can just hold off a little bit before buying stuff that you're probably not going to want anyway, my guess is you will be a lot happier. And then just take all that money and save it in an automatic fashion. And that's it. That wraps it up. So Linda,
I completely agree with you, Doug.
I thought you didn't like people feeling all poor. You like them feeling rich.
Well, now you're not. Now don't drop it on me where I can't explain myself at the end.
That's why you have to know your values. That's what I'm talking about. You got to know your values.
We're talking about spending priorities and matching what's important for you. Where is your money spent well for you? Not wasting money. I agree with you. You don't want to waste money and blow money on things that aren't going to be important to you in the near future. I completely agree with that.
Okay. So we'll agree to disagree.
We don't disagree. We don't disagree.
Yeah. I'm just going to, okay, good. So, fantastic. So let's, but we are out of time, guys. We got to close up. But hey, I know all of you are doing really cool stuff now. Let's start with the coolest of the cool. You were wondering who I would call. All right, let's just start with the other guy in the group. Joe, what's the cool thing going on with you?
Clearly not the coolest of the cool, but thank you. Hey, at our 5-day week podcast, Money in the Morning, we're talking about this dude. You may have seen this, and I'm going to call him this dude, who has $1 million in student loans. Like who has $1 million in student loans?
What school was that?
Yeah, the school of, hello, how are you going to get that money back? That might be the name of the school. And then also 9,000 barrels of bourbon fell recently.
Oh, yeah. I heard about
it. And so we cover headlines like that and tie those into your wallet and what that has to do with your money. Build some lessons on the stuff that we rip from places like USA Today and the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, places like that. 5 days a week at Money in the Morning.
Okay. And Linda, what's going on in your world?
Over at Be Wealthy and Smart, we're talking about investments for a late stage economic cycle. So as you know, I believe in cycles, mm-hmm. and we're getting a little lengthy in this one. So where are good places to invest?
Sounds great, Miranda.
Yeah, so actually I'm just, I'm still trying to get ready for this whole podcast movement Ignite thing that I signed up for because I'm a moron. So yeah, just working on that. And then also head on over to Planting Money Seeds for information on financial values and priorities and, you know, how to create the lifestyle you want.
Hey, and on Miranda's point, can I bring up something there? Miranda and I are both going to be at an event on Sunday, July 22nd, because we're both going to be in Philadelphia. So if you, how are people going to find this, Miranda?
I don't know. Where are you putting your Podcastrophe stuff up? I mean, it's called Podcastrophe, so.
It is called Podcastrophe. I mean, you get Miranda and I in the same place, it's a Podcastrophe.
That's true.
But we've got many different financial podcasters that are going to be there. We'll be at Yards Brewing at 6 p.m. on Sunday, the 22nd. But sign up. If you go to the Stacking Benjamins Facebook page, you'll see the Podcastrophe sign up. Just scroll through and you'll see it there.
Fantastic. That sounds great. Let me just tell you this cool thing we've now instituted on the Goldstein on Gelt show. Almost every show, we put together these really awesome one-pagers that we give out to people. And now they're really, really easy to get, even if you don't listen to the show, which of course you should. But each one is like summarizes usually between 5 and 10 takeaways that you can get from the show. So just go to goldsteinongelt.com, look at any show, and you'll find a lot of those one-pagers that are really easy to work with. Okay, that's about a wrap for us here on today's Money Tree Podcast. Miranda, take it out.
Thank you so much for listening to us today on the Money Tree Podcast. Don't forget, you can head to moneytreepodcast.com for all of our archives, listen to our latest show, get our show notes, and also listen to some of our old shows. We have a lot of oldies but goodies, and if you haven't listened to our earlier stuff, you should really check it out. You can also get more information on the panelists, on our sponsor, the Buzz Index, and find other resources, links to other resources that can help you invest in your life. And don't forget, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play. We are available everywhere fine podcasts are sold. And don't forget, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.